Cut it. Can we get rid of that? Cut it. Not a fan. Is that like fucking Diet Nickelback or something? Seriously, have we got something even more generic you can find to put people fucking sleep? Jesus. Look, let's cut the shit. 30-minute interviews released weekly. We're going to talk to some everyday Australian guys, ordinary blokes who have been through something extraordinary. It's going to be raw. It's going to be emotional. But hopefully you can go away with some tips and tricks, maybe some good habits that'll get you through your own rough patch of life. We're trying to break a stigma here. Blokes don't talk, so we're starting a conversation. Yeah, mate, no worries. Let's fucking go again. Outro music. Show us your picture, Chad.
Hello, Mr. Paul. How are you?
Yeah, good, Braden. How you doing, mate?
I'm well, thank you, sir. With a very good friend of mine, Paul Nichols, and was just commenting about how I'm sick of listening to the intro for a start, and secondly, how it says about the strictly 30 minutes when none of the interviews have come close to being strictly 30 minutes, but I think I'll just stick with it now because it's kind of ironically funny. So, tell us a little bit about you, man.
Yeah, man. Hey,
tell us the story of Paul.
Hey, thanks for having me on to start with. Really appreciate it. Paul Nichols, born and bred in Stratty, born, raised, went to school here, went to school at St. Pat's, went to school at Stratford Primary School before moving on to kind of St. Pat's, 33, mum, dad, two older sisters, nieces, yeah, that's pretty much my family structure, man.
Two older sisters, me too, how much older, man? I should know that, but I don't, sorry.
No, that's all good, 4 years and 6 years. So there's a bit of a gap.
Yeah. But, Mine are 9 and 12. So yeah, really. I grew up with three fucking mums, basically. So you've done all right out of that. You just had a little bit of protectiveness going on there, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Look, growing up, just loved to play footy, sports, unstructured as well. So not really. I was never any good, mate, but I kept playing. I was the forward pocket player in junior footy. Just hung around, kept active outside, really. That's a bit about me.
Cricket as well?
Cricket, yep, again. Batted number 11 and didn't bowl, but loved a good day out.
Champion fielder?
Yeah, absolutely.
The George Bailey of Stratford?
Yeah. Fine lead to fine lead, mate. That's what we did.
Very good, very good. So after year 12, what's some of the professional stuff you've done since in the study field?
Yeah, yep. So I went off to uni in Lauderdale at Swinburne and did my Bachelor in Information Systems out there. I had a clear goal leaving year 12 that I wanted to be a business analyst. That's what I wanted to do, and that's where I was going to be, and that was going to be my whole career. So I went to uni, did that. Finished, graduated, got a job out at Paddy's Foods in Bensdale before moving to Quicksilver, which was my dream job, junior business analyst at Quicksilver, a surf company out at Torquay, in head office, just working on implementing a new system. All well and good until a chick I went to uni with called me up and said, I'll give you $20,000 more if you come and work with me. So I think it took a kind of couple of days to decide whether it was money or whether it was lifestyle. And at that stage early in your career, you choose money. As you get on, you realise that's not that's not the best to do. That's where we went. And then we went back to study probably about 3 or 4 years ago, doing my master's. So
yeah, brilliant, brilliant. So pies and surf clothing, that's a pretty good start to life, mate. I'd be pretty chuffed with that, and I was giggling that you've got a Rip Curl hoodie on as you're talking about your Quicksilver work in Torquay. So what was the job that you went to after that, sorry?
So then it was an implementation consultant,
yep.
So project management, putting in asset management maintenance systems for just various companies.
Yeah, okay, so as the contractor effectively.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very cool. Current relationship status, sir.
Mate, single.
Have to try and hook you up with
yeah.
with hopefully some ladies listening out there. And obviously very sporty growing up as an adult. What are your sort of pursuits now? Obviously, I know footy, but what else are you into now?
Yeah, I try to keep active still. But my whole motto now is about infinite learning. So I'm continually learning, continually putting yourself out there to learn new things. Obviously, friends, family, and the events around that keep me busy. And I love to ride my motorbike, but really infinite learning, just trying to learn new things as we go along. And that's what I try to keep my hobby as.
Cool. Two things you touched on there, very interesting to me, sir. So what's the plan from here? What's your next aspired projects in the learning space for a start?
Yep. So finish off my MBA. Then I've started a short course on digital marketing to get more knowledge around that. It's not somewhere I want to head as a career, but it's something that kind of interests me. That marketing side of business is kind of where I've got a bit of passion for. So learning more about the digital side and how to set that up is something I want to know more about.
As in, you enjoy the psychology of it, or you're just overtly aware that anything in business has a certain level of sales to it, I guess?
Yeah, look, I with marketing, I love the strategy side of it. That's the ability for me to be able to create and get creative and think big picture about how to grow a brand or how to grow something and how to build something right up. So that's kind of why I love that marketing aspect of business.
Yeah, very cool. You mentioned your bike as well. Definitely a favourite pastime of mine. Tell us a bit about that and about what you get out of it, I guess.
Yeah, mate. So my riding my bike is my road bike is my meditation. So when I'm out on the bike, I don't think about anything else other than don't hit that tree, don't cross your lanes. Just you've got to really focus. So it draws my attention just to one thing. And I use my bike as my meditation. So it sucks during winter, mate, when you can't get out, but you find days.
It's funny, the two aspects of that for me is for me who've wasted a lot of money on sports cars and stuff, that there's still nothing that'll ever compare to the feeling of riding a bike. Doesn't matter how nice a car you've got, it's just a different beast. And the second thing is that you can't be distracted by your phone or music. You know, you can try if you want, but it's one of those unpolluted passions, I guess, so far, that what you said about meditation really resonates for me too, man. Well, kind of smashed through that, so we may as well take a break, dear sir, and we'll get into learning a little bit more about your journey thereafter.
Sounds good, man.
And now, a word from our sponsor. Nah, just fucking with you guys. We're never going to monetize this. This is your resource. And blokes, this round's on me. As we move into the next section of this conversation, we're going to be asking some pretty real questions. We're going to take things a level deeper. It'll be raw, but hopefully we'll come up with some tips and techniques that might help some fellas out there get through a bit. If what we discussed today raises some emotions for you, either from something you've got through in the past or something you're currently dealing with, discuss it with someone in your life you trust. If someone isn't immediately available, or if you're quite anxious about the feelings that you uncover, call Lifeline Australia. They're available 24/7, they care, and they're very professional. 13 11 14. Alternately, have the chat with your GP. Discuss going on a mental health plan if you're having a rough time. There's no shame in it. Get a little bit of counselling, get yourself travelling in the right direction. If the voice in our head gets a little bit negative, it doesn't magically get better. We need to introduce a professional. Someone who has a bit of rationality, someone who has a bit of positivity, somebody who can help us not just survive, but thrive. We need you, fellas, and we want to see the best of you. Okay, we're back with Paul, already on the dark side of the break, so to speak. really pumped through the setting up the Paul story for us, which is fantastic. So we'll deep end you a little bit, mate, and tell us about the hardest thing that you've ever had to go through.
Yeah, look, mate, I there's a few, and it's sometimes it gets really hard to talk about. But obviously, I was bullied at primary school and high school. I spent 5 years let's not hide it, in an abusive relationship, where I was controlled, manipulated, and that was pretty hard. But the hardest has been dad passing away suddenly last year, Australia Day last year. That's probably definitely the hardest thing I've gone through.
So just touching on a couple of those, mate, because obviously huge themes for a lot of people that probably shouldn't brush over any of the three. So what sort of age was the bullying, and, you know, if you're comfortable doing so, what sort of form, what sort of bullying are we talking about, and how long did you have to endure that for, I guess?
Yeah, look, it was both primary school age and high school. High school was more around being excluded, the exclusion from certain activities that people would go to and you just weren't invited to. And bullying takes a lot of forms. For me, there was never a physical aspect. It was all that emotional kind of aspect of bullying that touched me. But the exclusion of activities is probably the biggest one.
It's funny when you look at like workplace occupational health and safety now and workplace bullying. I think it's really great. Some people probably at face value think it's overkill, but that exclusion is now a considered part of that in terms of, you know, forming of those social networks that are purely work-based to an extent, but using that to exclude people on the basis of interpersonal preference, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
So abusive relationship, that's obviously huge, huge, huge and huge issue in Australia at the moment with domestic violence between the genders and emotional abuse both ways, I guess, and that obviously flows into custody issues and bigger issues that affect many people Australia-wide. So tell us a little bit without, you know, as much as you're comfortable disclosing, I guess, about what age you went through that and what sort of abuse you faced, I guess.
Yeah, look, it was my early to mid-20s, 33 now, so a few years ago. And it was more the controlling aspect of things. So it was here's your money that you're allowed to spend each week or each month kind of thing. You didn't like the family, so I was then not allowed to see the family. Those kind of things that really, really forced a huge strain on other relationships that you had. And look, I've spoken to it with my sister and my family now, and it's quite clear to us that's what it was. Without trying to put a title on it, it was clear that there was some kind of narcissism in there. It was hard getting out. And once you got out, there was that 18 months where we kind of fought through things, went through the court system, went through all that, splitting assets, doing all that. That takes a massive toll. I was just really fortunate to have a really supportive boss and a supportive network behind me.
So just to clarify that, mate, you basically went through a de facto settlement?
Yeah, yep.
Yeah, so for anyone that hasn't had to endure that process, I guess, if in most states of Australia, if you've been together a certain period of time, for all intents and purposes, you are considered to be going through the equivalent of a divorce. And the interesting thing specifically about a de facto settlement is that it is at the time of decision or the case effectively. So you may well have been in what feels an amicable environment, and separated for some period of time, but right down to the finances, entirely exclusive of individual circumstances, everything is considered that you have separated just that day. So it can be a very toxic and certainly, you know, heart-wrenching process. Fair to say, man?
Yeah, absolutely. The viewers can't see, but I was nodding my head pretty profusely then when you're saying that. It's exactly what we had to go through.
Yeah. I've been through that as well, and one we've got to discuss to some extent, probably not as deep as we should have, and it's probably owed a beer sometime, but likewise, lost my father in recent years and relatively quickly and without a hell of a lot of warning, I guess. So take us through what happened there for you and the bit of upheaval that caused for your life, I guess.
Yeah, look, paint the picture. Dad passed away, Australia Day 2019, as I mentioned earlier, from a heart attack. Heart attack, Painesville Beach. I just went down. He'd had cancer 7 weeks before. And so we'd seen his health kind of deteriorate and pretty rapidly. But then I just didn't get the chance to say goodbye. The last text I sent him was saying at around the time he would have had his heart attack, I've looked at him, worked back, is, mate, can I borrow you? I want to take the dog down the river. If I could, I would change that text just to put, I love you at the end of it. He was my best mate. He was my rock. So.
Yeah, it's certainly, for me, I had not as nearly a consistent relationship as from what I know you had with your dad. We were certainly very tight, but my dad had a bit of a worlds against me sort of a view, so it was a very one-sided relationship, I guess, that the consistency of which was probably driven through the last handful of years before he passed away on what energy I did or didn't have to be putting into the relationship. And it was actually one of the stages when I wasn't talking to him, and I remember, similarly, I had that weekend or something where I got a chance to think about the things you think about on a longer weekend, and thought that I should probably reach out to Dad. It was that time, you know, the 3 or 4 times a year, that sort of time, it was the Monday, I believe, that I got a call from my big sister saying he'd had an aneurysm, so that we were, as best we understood, coming home. We're all meeting in Melbourne to turn him off. I was in Perth at that stage, so it didn't turn out to necessarily be the case. It was a pretty long 3 months afterwards, but I certainly completely understand the whole wish we were on better terms at the time, and I think, you know, a lot of guys wish they were on better terms with their old man, maybe.
I got the phone call when your dad had a heart attack. Mum gave me a call and she goes, "Oh, look, your dad's been arrested." I'm like, "Oh, what's he done?" I said, "Oh, what's he done? What's he done?" And she's like, No, he's gone into arrest. He's gone into cardiac arrest." And didn't know what to do. I just froze. And then I got in the car. I got to Stratford to Painesville in about 15 minutes, which you know is over an hour drive, and I was ready to say, you know, and look, I don't advocate speeding or driving dangerously at all, but I was ready to kind of, if I got pulled over, I'd say, look, yep, take my license, but just get me to Painesville as soon as possible.
Yeah, it's pretty hard, man. You know, not that it's necessarily important, but just curious for the grieving process, how you said that Dad had been diagnosed with cancer a couple of weeks before. What sort of prognosis, like, had you emotionally started the process that you mightn't have your dad for forever sort of thing, or was the heart attack still fucking entirely out of the blue?
The heart attack, being that sudden, was out of the blue. We thought we'd have at least 12 months, a couple of years. He was terminal, but we were under the impression that we'd have a good period of time to say goodbye. And he had decided once he became terminal that, cool, shut the businesses down and really focus on family, really focus on life. So when I think that made it harder. Dad had worked for 49 years as an electrician. So I think that I don't know, like some of the best memories I have with Dad is going to work with him. So I think what made it harder was that he had made the decision that, cool, now it's time to really enjoy life and say goodbye properly. And then that was just cut short. You didn't have the chance.
It's hard, man. Now, obviously, from what I understand, you had a great relationship with your dad, other than, you know, that relatively trivial to your broader relationship. Wish that last text had been framed a little bit more indicative of how well you get along. You know, your best mates, like you said. But I guess for me, and I'm sure you'd agree, message out of that really is I guess make sure you're treating the people that ultimately hugely matter to you like it could be your last interaction with them or last day or week with them, because you just don't necessarily know.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I think me asking to borrow his ute or asking that was kind of trivial. Like, that always happened. Dad and we'll get into this a bit later, but one of the things I really admired in Dad was how giving he was, and how he put other people first all the time, and that's what I've tried to do now. Me asking to borrow his ute wasn't out of the ordinary. But if I had known that he was having a heart attack at the time I sent him the text message, which is probably the case, or could have been the case, I would have said, yeah, just love you. So the last thing he saw was that.
Yeah, now I assume very much like me, man, that fucking nothing necessarily helps, and certainly not for a very long time. But in terms of going through that grieving process and keeping on top of all those emotions associated with that, what were some positive habits that helped get you through that at the time, you think, or have let you process that healthily since?
So I had moved back to Stratty from Geelong. I'd been living in Geelong for the last 4 or 5 years. I'd moved back to Stratty probably about 9 months earlier, 6 9 months earlier. In that time, I'd kind of gone overseas and come back and done different things. I would hate to imagine what it would have been like if I was still in Geelong. So obviously moving back to Stratty, being around my family, being around my support network was critical to me. I decided to start playing footy, and I remember telling Dad about it, because you told Dad before you told Mum everything, because then he'd know he'd give you advice on when to mention it or what to do, and that we all know that, like, that was just how you went about things. So I told Dad I'm gonna play footy, and at first, like, Mum didn't really understand why I'd want to play, and it was Dad that said to her, look, he's playing because he needs friends around him. And so it was footy, and being around those mates and being around that support network that really, really helped at the time. after he passed, I said to my cousin that we both know, I said, look, I'm just going to spend some time helping Mum in the yard. She needs to get the yard cleaned up before people come for the funeral. If you've got a spare minute, can you come around? 15 blokes turned up. 15 blokes in the footy club that I'd known for probably 2 or 3 months came and spent the whole day cleaning up the yard, pressure washing, weeding, mowing lawns, ripping shit out, just making the house look good. And it wasn't that they did the work. It was that they were there to support us.
Yeah, huge shout out to Stratford Football Netball Club that myself and Paul have both had a fair bit to do with over the last couple of years, and it makes me think and worry a little bit about with the coronavirus and everything that's going on. You know, I think our local football netball clubs and other sports clubs are such a huge resource as, you know, an emotional resilience tool maybe, and support network to people going through a bit, that you just wonder and worry how that's being replicated this Australian winter. There'd be a lot of people out there that, you know, every Thursday, Saturday, whatever it may be, have suddenly got 60 less mates that they might be able to talk to about whatever it is that's wearing them out that week.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, small communities rely on their smaller groups to survive and to prosper. And not just from an economic point of view, but from a support point of view. Historical societies, all those places that people go to learn, to meet new people, to socialise. That's what small communities need.
Now, I know you're not a particularly vice-ridden gentleman, but any habits or tendencies or you know, things you turn to or indulged in during the time, particularly post-dad passing away, that retrospectively weren't helpful and that you'd sort of steer people away from?
I turned to food a fair bit. I ballooned out. There's no secrets. Comfort eating, really. And some would say I still am. But I'm trying to do something about that. But I was fortunate. I wasn't. I didn't turn to alcohol. Or I didn't turn to drugs. Or I didn't turn to anything like that. I've never been a heavy alcohol user or a drug user. So yeah, I was kind of sheltered from that. So I didn't have any kind of things that took me there, which I'm very, very fortunate about.
Yeah, no, myself also. I might have made a bit of a train wreck of my 20s, but I'm forever fortunate that I grew up in a fairly conservative family that at least let me get to an adult age to make those mistakes and try and make them relatively responsibly. So totally feel you there, man. So flip the coin, bit of sunshine on the conversation. If you were to identify, you know, the greatest moment of your life or the proudest moment of your life, whatever sort of fits that emotional genre, is there something you can identify?
I suppose the best moment of my life. Yeah, look, it was quite recently, actually. I was very, very fortunate to spend 3 weeks in Italy, and not as a holiday. I went over there as part of European Innovation Academy. So I went over there to learn about startups, learn about and launch a business, and learn everything around that kind of design thinking principles and how you can scale and how you can really start something up. It wasn't until then that I'd really comprehended kind of what I wanted to do or work on, or what I was most passionate about. So spending that 3 weeks in Italy really kind of showed me that I'm passionate about creation. Passionate about creating products, passionate about software, passionate about making a difference through software. And we come up with a really, really cool idea that's still in its early stages and not sure where it'll go. But it was an app that would deliver peace of mind to the families of Alzheimer's patients. So it was something that could be commercialized but had that deeper meaning, that deeper idea behind it. And so that's where I kind of found my passion. It pretty much changed kind of where I wanted to go. I had no idea until then, so.
Yeah, outstanding, man. So pretty reasonable field in which to find your direction as well, in terms of the being something potentially so beneficial, and that whole sort of, you know, innovation aspect that lights your fire. I guess is all about trying to improve life for people going through different things. Moving on from that, man, we discussed this one earlier. So what would you identify as the most embarrassing or potentially the worst thing that you've done in your life?
Yeah, I was saying to you to you before this started that I'm not generally one to get embarrassed about much, but I think thinking about it, if anything, I'm whether embarrassed is the right word or whether it's disappointed, I'm kind of a little bit embarrassed that I've left some friendships, some relationships, some deteriorate with people that I actually did admire, to the point where some it's hard to get back or it's hard to reform those. But we all learn lessons, hey? Like everything that embarrasses you or everything that disappoints you is a lesson that you can learn. So I've learnt not to allow that to happen again. And I'm keeping the circle that I want close to me. I've been able to look at some you couldn't get back, and it was just that was it. Like you just got to cut ties. But I've been able to reestablish some relationships with cousins in Adelaide, with cousins locally, with some friends, and I've made a whole new support network. And now I know going forward that look, don't take it for granted.
It's crazy. It'd be interesting to see, you know, and I'm sure it's very different from person to person, but some studies around, you know, emotional energy and thoughts on, you know, how many people you can sort of have very strong relationships with in your life at the same stage. Because obviously there's always people we outgrow or we change our circumstances to an extent we don't have as much in common anymore, but definitely be interesting to see some work around how many people you can healthily have engaged relationships with at any one time.
Mm. No, yeah, dead right again.
So transversely to that, man, what's the bravest or most honourable thing you've ever done? I suppose you double-guessed yourself before because it's really close to saying proudest, which was probably confusing your answers with the best moment of your life, but what would you identify as where you have exceeded your expectations the most?
Yeah, look, it's and thinking about this too went long and hard and deep into thinking about this, and it's being able to make decisions for myself when I've realised that it's deteriorating my mental health. So things like we spoke earlier about the toxic relationship I was in, making that decision after that 4.5-5 year period to say, hey, this will kill you, you need to get out, is something I'm quite proud of. I've made a decision recently that I don't want to go into too much, but which was putting myself first and leaving a situation which was quite toxic. And then, again, with making decisions, it's going and seeing the GP and getting on the mental health plan. So go see a psychologist and start that process, because I know that it's not that I'm not strong enough. It's not that I'm weak and mentally weak. It's that, hey, I just need some more tools. I need some help to get through some things. So making those decisions is what I'm kind of quite proud of, quite happy with myself about doing that, because it's bloody hard.
It definitely is, man. And one thing, I know it's not quite where you took that, so please don't think that I didn't take that all in, but I was thinking specifically about you identifying, you know, leaving that relationship as maybe a symptom of your broader comments there. But that's a huge one. You know, people, I spoke a little bit about it with Corey a couple of weeks ago about how people are generally happier against traditional happiness indexes from a psychological standpoint when they have less decisions to make. So the comfort of being in a relationship, even if abusive, is you know, not to be discounted. So having the balls, for lack of a better word, having the bravery to realize that this isn't a positive part of your life and press reset is huge. And it's funny, was mentioning the de facto settlement before, and I was actually speaking to a counsellor a couple of weeks ago. I had some relationship issues and was speaking to a counsellor sort of weekly about that, and we were going through my chronology of key events and identified, and not that it was particularly abusive, but my de facto settlement story was that I was in a relationship for 6 years-ish with someone that at the end of the day I had absolutely nothing in common with, and they weren't necessarily a bad person or anything. I was probably the one, the, you know, the weak link in the relationship, certainly towards the deterioration of it anyway, but just the comfort of that circumstance, even if not ideal, is crazy, and it takes a lot of bravery to leave that. I remember, like I said, when I was speaking to the counsellor, it's like, and I was with this person for 6 years, and it was a really insignificant part of my life, and that was kind of quite scary. But it I guess shows again that it's difficult to walk away from, and you know how brave it was, and rightly proud you are of doing that, and embracing a bit of chaos and starting again.
Yeah. Yep. No. Yeah. Absolutely spot on again, mate.
So, following on from what's honourable and admirable, I guess, who would you identify as your hero, mate, or someone you admire the most?
Yeah, look, this is quite a cliche answer, mate, but it's definitely my dad. Without a doubt, seeing how he kind of lived his life, how he supported his family, his values, that's what I strive for. And to me, a hero is someone you want to be. And if I can be half the man he was, mate, I'm doing a bloody good job.
So, specific to how he lived his life and those sort of values that he held, I guess what of those do you find the most admirable, and how do you think you're tracking it at representing those yourself?
Yeah, look, he was a family man. He was loyal, he was generous, he was genuine, he'd put others before himself. And without realizing it, but it kind of makes sense that these are now where I get my qualities from and where I strive for. I want to forge my own path, of course, but live in his shadow, and live up to the values that he had for himself as well. And how do I know I'm doing that? When I have a decision to make or when I do something, I ask, would Dad be proud of me? Would Dad like what I'm doing here? Would he be proud of me and what I'm doing here? And look, there's been some times where I'd say, no, he wouldn't, so I'd stop it. But 80% of the time since his passing, I think I've really, tried to make him proud.
Love that, man. So, flowing on from that, what would you say is most admirable about you? What's your quality that you're proudest of, that the people around you would admire, or at least say a quintessential Pickles? What would you identify that as?
These are always hard to answer, aren't they? Like, how do you talk yourself up? I'm not very egotistical at all, so I find this very difficult. But I think if you were to ask a group of people what they think about me, I would hope they'd come back and say I'm a genuine man. I'm raw. I'm not polished. I mix my words up. I struggle to be articulate at times, but I'm genuine. And I want to be genuine because that's what I want to be known for. I want people to know that I look. Yeah, like he might be rough, or he might mix his words up, or he might struggle to talk at times, but he's a genuine person. He's loyal. He has a huge heart. If I can be genuine, loyal, and a huge heart, I'm getting out of here pretty good. I'm pretty happy with that.
Yeah, I don't think many people that interact with you regularly would say that you're not those, and certainly that you wear your heart on your sleeves. So that's awesome, man. So we kind of touched on it earlier, but how would you describe your current relationship with your mental health?
Look, like everyone, we have ups and downs. We being my mental health and me. It was only last week that I was kind of crying myself to sleep a few days until I made a decision that changed it around for me. But and I think that speaks to what I've been able to learn through these kind of sessions that I've been having is identify what your triggers are, identify kind of what's affecting you and change it. You've got the power to change it. So identify what you're doing and really, yeah, make it better. So what's kind of causing that anxiety or what's causing those low points and then how can you deal with it? So just kind of made decisions that best affect mental health.
Yeah, I love it, man. Question that's probably, I just realized, even more important with what we're going through of people's routines being majorly flipped on their head. What's something that you're looking forward to?
I'm unemployed. So I think I spoke to you the other day. I said, mate, I've just left my job. I'm scared. But and you quite rightly put it back to me. And goes, well, what a challenge. And that's what I'm excited to. I left my job when a lot of people don't have a choice. When a lot of people are being pushed into the unemployment because of the current COVID-19 situation, I had a choice. And I left because it wasn't the right fit. And it wasn't making me happy. So I've got a chance now to kind of pave my own way. Take on some of these smaller projects that I've been dreaming up for a while and see if I can make them successful. See how I can kind of really drive what I want to do, and whether it's digital products, what we spoke about earlier, whether it's selling hand sanitizer, whether it's just little things, what can I do to make myself successful? I'm excited by that.
I think it's really interesting, Tom. Like, I think a lot of people are going to come out of it more personally developed because all those projects, emotional projects, professional projects that they've had stored away waiting to address, suddenly there's no excuses. So hopefully they either do or at least, stop allowing them to be that forever dream in the corner one way or another. And even locally and specific to your fields of proficiency in ingenuity and IT, for lack of a broader, better description, it's been amazing for me how under 2020 ready our region of Victoria has been. Obviously, in your field, and I'm in marketing as well. The shock our region has gone through at having got away on the basis of customer service and reputation, which is fantastic values, obviously, but got away on purely that for so long, rather than address the future-proofing nature of technology at all. I think it's going to be an interesting reset individually and culturally.
Well, listening to your podcast with Corey, it was, and how he's had to change his business model, and it's really given him the chance to take a step back and look forward about how he can change. You see a lot of small businesses around here who have had to innovate. They've had to find new ways, and that's what's quite exciting. I was speaking to a well-known marketing guy the other day, runs an agency in Melbourne. He goes, how's things in Gippsland with COVID? How are you going? I was like, yeah, look, mate, it's difficult because we've got a lot of small businesses who aren't tech savvy, but it's so rewarding and it's so just eye-opening to see how resilient they can be when they're forced to be. And I think we'll go forward now and a lot of business models will change because bricks and mortar isn't just the only way now. And I think we're starting to realise that.
It's crazy, mate, because I've initially, as everyone, gone through an emotional roller coaster, I guess, but as a passionate Gippslander and like I said, someone in advertising in the region, I've been very worried about smaller businesses going through bushfires and then going through this and thinking it would be a bit of a, an opportunity for bigger fish, to swallow up and so on and so forth. But you forget in that. And what's really beautiful to see the last couple of weeks is also how loyal Gippslanders is. So, the fact that reputation and bricks and mortar has worked for so long is culturally based to an extent. So as these smaller businesses have awkwardly taken steps into, the the post bricks and mortar stage, shall we say, or at least being slightly tech savvy, how willing their consumer base is to be patient and go along for the ride, has been crazy, I reckon.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so back to all things Paul, now that we've talked about local commerce for a while. Now, what's a piece of advice you would give 18-year-old Pickles?
Yeah, look, it's stop and smell the roses. Stop and smell the fucking roses, because really, what's the point of sweating the small stuff? Do what you love, not what pays well. They're kind of cliches, but going back to when I was 18, I was more worried about finding a job that would pay good money. And now I realise that that's not the be-all and end-all. But kind of self-reflect and be proud of what you do. Look back and go, and it's not egotistical to look back and go, hey, you know what, I did a really good job there. Well, what I did there was really good. Give yourself a pat on the back and kind of talk yourself up, because we don't do enough of that. We rely on other people's positive feedback. I don't think as society in a whole, and I know I don't think we stop and give ourselves that kind of positive feedback to say, you know what, that strategy document you just put together, you absolutely nailed that. Well done. Yeah, and just spend time with those who'll support you. I wasted a lot of time, and a lot of relationships were just a waste of time. So spend time understanding who's in your support network, who's your top 10.
Absolutely, man. Love that. Big advocate as I've, I guess, moved further into my 30s and got my life back together a bit of running towards those, running towards you. So I absolutely love that. Now, this is dangerous because we're running short of time and I'm clumsy with words at the best of times. So we will see how we go, because I know it'll be a decent question. Interview the interviewer. So what's something that you would like to open the floor to me on, mate, that's currently going on for you, or a men's mental health question, or something along the lines, or something that you want to discuss?
Yeah, look, mate, and I'm going to hit you here, but you've changed careers. You've gone, or changed industries, really. You've gone from being a hospitality genius that everyone knows to working where you are now and absolutely killing it where you are. Why did you make that change? How did you go about it? And did you find it easy? Was it an easy transition for you?
First thing that comes to my mind is way too generous. I'm a long way off killing it where I am, but I think I'm getting away with, like I said, being patriotic for the area. So having a genuine interest in the businesses I'm working with doing well, and also, I guess, from having a bit of business now, from having worked in hospitality. For me, the change was forced by how, I guess, fantastic my new employer is, and how generous the conditions are, in that I'm home every night, I don't work weekends, things that I haven't really traditionally experienced in hospitality. And my last hospitality gig I absolutely loved. Incredible people. Shout out to Tony and to Kev, and at the time Stu down at Waterwheel Tavern in Lake Tyres. Probably the most I've enjoyed working anywhere, to be honest. But the reality is that for what they needed me for, I was never going to be worth enough money to justify turning down a role locally that was Monday to Friday and 8:30 to 5:06, Matt Cummins tells me, and it'd be a real difficult conversation to have with the better half about why that made sense. I think I'll always be a hospitality nuffy, and if I win lotto or something, I'll be buying a pub for sure. But that's what made sense about it to me. Incredible employer, great conditions, and the reason that I haven't drowned too badly in changing career path, I guess, to something quite different is that transferable skill set, I guess, that I was lucky enough to have from hospitality.
Thanks, man.
It's a good question. I didn't expect that. I thought you were going to try and fuck me hard with something completely different, but that was I like that. That's really cool.
I got out of that a lot because, and having that transferable skill set. So it doesn't matter the industry. You can move your skills from spot to spot. And that's where I am now.
There was a manager I worked for. I was working for Transfield in WA doing the military contracts around the time they won a lot of the military contracts. And I originally was supposed to be a food and beverage supervisor for a base and end up food and beverage supervisor for the state. And I went and spoke to my manager at the time, Ash, who's one of the best people, most impressive people I've ever worked for. And I said to him, you know, I feel like I'm drowning sometimes. You know, I never get through this list of jobs. And he grabbed a normal traditional lined notepad from his right side of his desk and flicked through 8 pages of notes. And he said, this is my list. And he said, it's not about getting through the list. It's about getting good at slowly ticking things off. And I was like, fuck, okay, yeah, no, that changes the way I think about everything. So I think if you're good at finding the answers and if you're good at finding the flow in terms of approaching the work efficiently, you can build yourself a skill set that's adaptable to most environments professionally, which is what you've done.
Yeah, you're forced to sometimes, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, we're pretty much out of time, so thank you so much, Mr. Paul, and we're going to leave it there. I feel like we'll have to have another chat sometime because that was a hell of a lot of fun.
Yeah, awesome, man. I really appreciate it.
Thanks. Much love, bro. I'll speak to you soon.
Thanks.
Blokes, thanks again for tuning in. Really hope you got something out of that. Start having those conversations with your mates, with your family, with a mental health professional if you need to. There's absolutely no shame in it. If you want to reach out to us or follow along, we're on Facebook or Instagram under Blokes Don't Talk. And to listen, we're available on all your good podcast platforms. Share it with a mate. Even if you're not quite sure, worst you can do is tell you he's not that interested. Might come back to you in a month or two and have really got something out of it. Thanks again. Talk next week.